Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, Fukushima irradiated and fluoridated, where everybody has a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb to help the economy by government mandate of our Prime Minister John Key, the Federal Reserve Banker. Today we have a very special guest. In fact, I've been waiting a long time for this, some of my listeners have as well, so it's bound to be pretty good. I think her name is Dr. Janet Hull, and she'll be on the line right now. Janet, are you there?
I sure am.
Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks, Vinny. Thanks for having this topic on. It's a really important one.
Well, could you, just for the listeners, explain just a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
Well, I do a lot of things, actually. I'm actually an environmental engineer, and my job is to clean toxins out of the environment. And I'm a university professor where I teach cleaning up the environment. But in 1991, I got into aspartame in Diet Dr. Pepper, and I almost died a year later. So I began investigating the toxins in our foods and handled that situation the same way I would handle toxins in the environment. So I cleaned up my diet. I got all the diet NutraSweet products out with aspartame. And I cured myself in 30 days from what was supposedly an incurable disease. So I sort of switched horses midstream there, and I got into health and nutrition. But I treat health and nutrition like a toxicologist, like I'm cleaning up people's toxins in their body, just like I'd clean it up in the environment. So I am a NutraSweet aspartame diet soda expert on the dangers of aspartame and sucralose and acesulfame K and cyclamates and the whole gambit.
Well, then walking into a gas station must be a terrible experience then.
Well, actually, they probably have more safety precautions in a gas station than they do in that Diet Cola people drink.
Indeed. A friend of mine told me that, there's like six classifications of toxins. One meaning you can, you know, drink in it, you can bathe in it, it's water. And six meaning if you take one whiff of its fumes, you're going to flop around on the ground and die for a couple of seconds or something. And he told me that when Coca-Cola syrup comes off the ships, or at least here in New Zealand, that they're wearing these oxygen tanks and they ship it via hazmat truck over to the local bottling plant and then water it down with municipal water, sell it to you, and call it the real thing.
Yes. Well, I tell you what, this issue, Vinny, is a real issue, and it has been an issue since the 1960s. And the sad thing about it is that we are inundated with toxins, man-made chemical toxins in our environment. And when we start realizing how many toxins, over 80,000 different chemicals, are added to our food and water supply and our drinks, it's overwhelming. Our bodies are not made to ingest so many man-made chemicals. And when people do this day after day after day, it would be like, you know, inhaling fumes, toxic fumes, day after day after day. We're going to break our bodies down. We're going to get sick. Children aren't going to develop physically or emotionally normal. It's amazing that this is such a common sense issue, and it's a nuts and bolts. Take the toxins out and, you know, you'll be healthier. But this has been going on and on for over 30 years because the money that the pharmaceutical companies make on the drugs to counter the side effects. And actually, the pharmaceutical companies that own these cola companies are the ones that own the companies that sell you the drugs for the side effects. It nets so much money, they just won't let it go.
Well, disaster is a profitable business, especially if you're the one who creates it, and then you're the one that people scream, help me, save me.
Exactly. They've got you coming and going, don't they? They do. They do. And the sad thing is, you know, people can make the choice. People can smoke cigarettes. They can consume alcohol. They can eat fatty foods and fast foods. But if they know, if they make that decision to do that and the freedom that they have to make decisions, good or bad decisions, if they at least know the entire story, if they have all the data, if they know that if you smoke cigarettes, there's a chance that it could harm your body. But with the diet drinks and the aspartame and the other diet sweeteners, people, consumers, are not being told the truth, and they're not being told the other side of this issue and the health dangers it can present. So people are consuming this product without the truth, and to me, that is one of the biggest crimes and disservice, because the researchers know it, the corporations know it, the governments know it, everyone knows this information. They just aren't allowing it public because they would rather profit than, you know, have a blanket, healthier mass society.
Now, there's another element to this. A friend of mine, my girlfriend's friend, Rowan, is drinking Coke Zero and things like that. And she runs marathons, and she's a lawyer. And, you know, you'd expect these educated people to have at least, I don't know, some modicum of intelligence. And, you know, I tell her that stuff's very dangerous. You know, you got to stop drinking it. It'd actually even be better to drink the regular Coke than the aspartame-flavored one. That's good at all.
Right.
And I was wondering, what would you tell somebody who doesn't know anything about it to give them the info that they'd need to kind of push them over the edge and just go, you know what, I don't think I'm going to buy another bottle of that?
You know, the first thing that you tell people is this is very well documented, very well researched, and it has been proven to be true. Usually, especially intelligent people who work with, you know, lots of documents and they need a lot of evidence and proof, that they're going to look at you like, all right, let me listen to you. Because, you know, it's not your opinion and it's not just another complaint, you know, that people are throwing out there. It is true science, very respectable science. And then when you tell people that this is extremely political, they seem to listen and pay attention to that as well. And I'm sure you know that, and you know, with doing your radio show. So much in our modern time is so politically tied that when people realize that this issue is political, they will listen, because everything right now is political. All of the good things seem to be swept past, you know, under the carpet, and what is seeming to rule this world is profit and arrogance and control. So that's what I usually tell people. Look, I almost died from it, but let me tell you, it is a true, valid concern. And if they want to listen, then you can give them the research and you can give them some of the history. It surprises me, Vinny, that people don't want to know. You would think that they would want to know if they were doing something that was causing them headaches, to lose their hair, to actually gain weight. The diet sweeteners have been proven in the lab to cause weight gain. And, you know, and most people have headaches when they ingest aspartame. They'll get a headache right in the middle of their forehead, right about that third eye there where the blood-brain barrier is. You start telling them about the symptoms, and they start to think, huh, maybe that's what's causing my headaches, because they'll have them. So once
that's not the only symptom, though, is it?
You know, aspartame can penetrate into the brain, so it goes bloodborne. And once it gets into the brain center, it can create it. Well, it's just a loose cannon. It usually goes for the weak link in someone's body. If they're predisposed to diabetes, it's going to break that down. If they're predisposed to migraine headaches anyway, it's going to make the headaches worse. So what happens is that when you put a toxin in the body, if you put a toxin anywhere, let's say you're running a toxin through a water hose, that toxin is going to find the hole in the hose, the weak spot of the hose, to come out. So when you have a weakness in your body, whether it's genetic or you've had a car accident or, you know, and so your body had been a little broken up at one time, whether your eyes were bad, you've got, you know, you have to wear glasses. If you have a weakness anywhere in your body, when you ingest toxins day after day after day, those toxins will go to the weak links and break those down first, and so they'll make that worse. Typically, aspartame will cause headaches, vision problems, some dizziness, vertigo. Those are the most common reactions. Children will get these, and you know, they get grumpy because they don't feel well. But after you've used this toxin year after year after year, it then begins to saturate the glands in the brain and the glands in the body, so you begin to have weight problems, libido problems. You can't sleep as well. So it just sort of exacerbates itself. There's over 92 documented symptomatic reactions to aspartame on record. And that's a lot.
Sorry. How many?
92.
Oh, I can't.
92.
Who was the man who actually got this stuff legalized? I heard it was Donald Rumsfeld back in the day when he was CEO of Sara Lee Corporation.
Well, I'll give you the history. I'll give you the history of aspartame. It is very political. And what we're looking at here are, yes, we had a lot of public officials who, I call it the revolving door. They will go from government to business, back from business, back to government, depending upon who, of course, is in the American presidential office. But what they would do is go through this revolving door, and they would take the interests of their corporations, then they would take those in and lobby them into the government. So what we're looking at as one of the biggest players is Robert Shapiro and Donald Rumsfeld. And we know that those two men were both extremely powerful in the Republican Party when Republican presidents are in. And both of these individuals, yes, they had the CEO and the president's position in Monsanto and in GD Sterile Pharmaceuticals. And so they were extremely powerful in looking at the long-term picture of NutraSweet. And this was the time when the NutraSweet company was the exclusive. It had a monopoly on the diet sweeteners. But what's interesting is GD Sterile Pharmaceuticals discovered aspartame. And I'll back up here for just a second, Vinny. I've got the original records. I've been in this from the beginning. A lot of what's out on the internet now and a lot of what you will read in articles is not quite accurate. What I have in my book, Sweet Poison, and what I do on the internet is the information that I have is all beginning in the 1960s, and it's all the original research and researchers. So a lot of this information is getting kind of lost, you know, as it moves forward in time. So we're going back here to the original deal here. In the 60s, GD Sterile Pharmaceutical was researching an ulcer medication, just a new ulcer drug. And the researcher in the laboratory accidentally discovered that his concoction was sweet. And it really never went here nor there. They continued to perfect the formula, and when they realized that it was no calorie, because it was a drug, and they realized how sweet it was, and it didn't have an aftertaste, they decided, whoa, we've found us an artificial sweetener. And the only sweetener on the market at that time was saccharin. And saccharin had a bitter taste, and people weren't going for it. They weren't buying into the quote-unquote diet fad before the 1960s. Saccharin was mainly for diabetics and people that were grossly overweight. So what they did is they had a petition in with the FDA to get approval on a drug for the ulcer medication, and all they did was just change the paperwork for approval for a food additive. And so they switched it, and they put in the approval, they dropped it as an ulcer drug, and they put in the approval for it to be approved as a new diet sweetener. Well, at this time...
Dr. Janet, we're coming to the break here, just a short break here for the network, and we'll be right back with Dr. Janet Hull, one of the world's foremost authorities on aspartame, if not the world's foremost authority. We'll be right back after the break. Join us in the chat room at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Back in a minute.
Come gather around, people. You roam and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, or the times they are a-changing.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. You can join us in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com there. In fact, we've got a whole bunch of people in there, more than normal, so that's nice. Dr. Janet Hull is my guest. Doctor, welcome back.
Thank you.
Mm-mm. Now, what were we up to? We were explaining the history behind aspartame there.
The aspartame, and this is when, you know, it was a GD Sterile pharmaceutical thing. So aspartame came on the market, they accepted it as a diet sweetener or as a food additive when they put the application in with the FDA in the early 1970s. But by this time, independent researchers began to research this miracle diet sweetener thing, and several of the scientists were from Washington School of Medicine and SUNY and Cambridge, and I mean from very reputable institutions, and they were discovering that the aspartame was eating holes in the brain mass of their laboratory animals. And they were using primates in the study, and all the primates were dying from grand mal seizures. So they came forth when the application for FDA approval was first put in the early 70s. These researchers came forth and spoke in front of the FDA and said, no, 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 no. We are finding all kinds of physical problems with this. Brain tumors was the biggest one. So the FDA rescinded its approval, and then it took until 1981 to get it reapproved. So they had about 9 years from 72 to 81 to try to figure out how they were going to push this through, because they realized what a cash cow this would be. Well, G.D. Searle Pharmaceutical was bought by Monsanto Chemical Company in 1985, and Monsanto Chemical Company had the patent on saccharin, and they had been using saccharin in Coca-Cola originally in the Coca-Cola since 1902. So Monsanto purchased G.D. Searle Pharmaceutical, and then at this time, they're trying to see if they can get FDA approval. At this time, they formed the NutraSweet company, and they put the all, no stops on getting this approved through the FDA. So this is when it turned political. And now you've got Robert Shapiro and Donald Rumsfeld driving this bus, because this became a political move now, not a nutritional move, not a move for the benefit of everyone. It became a political push. So what happened then, we've got Monsanto, who actually owned both saccharin and NutraSweet at this time. Saccharin wasn't making them much money, so they kept saccharin on the market. And that bogus cancer warning for saccharin, that was totally bogus. They had that ready to use if they needed to, but it wasn't the saccharin that caused the cancer. It was the cyclamate, and again, we've got the research to prove that. But they didn't use that saccharin caused cancer until NutraSweet had aspartame finally pushed through the FDA in 1981. Once that happened, then they slapped the cancer warning on saccharin, and they pushed NutraSweet into the public with a force. But they, if you think about it, they never took saccharin off the market. And it was agreed at that time in 1981 that saccharin's cancer warning would be removed in 2001. And it was. So the saccharin warning was removed about the time Splenda comes on the market and is the first competitor that NutraSweet and aspartame had in, 20 years. So that's sort of a quick history of how it was discovered, the hands that changed from G.D. Searle to Monsanto, how Monsanto got it pushed through politically, and they had all of this mapped out for the timetable. So when Splenda came on board, then that's when aspartame, the NutraSweet company, sort of broke down and everything sort of just went in different directions. So this has been politically maneuvered since day one.
Well, in my opinion, whenever something's politically maneuvered and it affects people's health negatively, is usually eugenicists behind it.
Well, you know what? It's funny, Vinny. I don't give these guys that much credit, to tell you the truth. In a way, I think they look at the money. In my personal opinion, I think they look at the money that they can make and the monopoly that they can create. Now, once that became an issue and people began to get sick from this, then they came in with their drugs to counter effect the reactions from the NutraSweet, the health dangers from the NutraSweet. From that standpoint, I believe then they saw the control. I don't think they saw it from the very get-go, because I honestly don't think they're that smart. But as time went on, they began to see the control that they were getting. Now, once they realized the control they had on the public by pushing this into everything, that's when they then began to take advantage of that position of power.
So let's say they started out accidentally enslaving everybody and making themselves the overlord, and now that they have enslaved everybody and are the overlords, they're like, hey, that's a pretty awesome coincidence.
And this is easy now. And not only can we make money, but we can literally control. I honestly believe it was an accidental discovery, but once they discovered it, they thought they hit the mothership, you know? They thought they were on the mothership. They're in total control. And New York City has recently, and whether I don't think this is going to stick, but Mayor Bloomberg in New York City has just recently outlawed regular colas in New York, but they will allow diet colas. So regular colas are going to be sold in the back alley with marijuana, while your diet colas are going to be shoved down everybody's throats now because they've outlawed regular colas in replace of diet colas. Now, that's not only stupidity, but you're right. That's genocide. That's insane. That is total insane.
Now, let's think about this. If somebody's insane and they got a gun, how much more dangerous are they than an average person, you know? And I look at it like this. The government, run by insane people, how many of the armed forces do they control? Like all of them, you know? It's like,
right.
I don't know. If you kind of can think like a psychopath for a moment, the world sort of makes a hell of a lot of sense, or a lot more than it currently does.
I've never looked at it quite that way. I'm going to have to think about that for a second. But it sure would be an open playground for a psychopath, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's like a merry-go-round playground for the psychopaths, and they have the revolving doors that equate the revolving door of the massive corporations and the government agencies and the financial system. And then, of course, you've got the seesaw over here when people are like, oh, yeah, as one politician goes down, they're like, yeah, we're getting this other guy rising up. The only problem is he's just as bad as the other guy, and you're going to wind up going down sooner or later. And the monkey bars and things like that. It's strength testing you and trying to get your balance and what have you. But there ain't nothing below those monkey bars. It's basically like a pit of lava or something that your kids will fall into. It's like, the devil's playground, as it were.
You know, I think that the solution to this, because we all over the world are getting rather depressed and a little tired of the negativity, and it seems that it's out of control. And I think that the upside to this is this: it was a marketing scheme, it was a ploy from some very savvy CEOs to find a way to cover the market, to have a product that they could bank and make millions on, or billions on, I should say, worldwide. And I believe it started off with just pure greed and a lot of arrogance for them to think that they could make an artificial sweetener that worked in the body better than a natural sweetener made from the earth. But it was all just a marketing ploy, and it was all greed to start off with. And then when it became a political push, once you take a marketing manufacturing ploy and you then infiltrate that politically, then you've got a big problem. And then once that began and started to take over, I think the sad thing is, like I had mentioned earlier, people like you and me, you're in the media, I'm in the media, we're educators, we're informers, we're light. You know, we light the lights for people. We want them to understand this is here, it's in front of you. You must learn about this. You must work to find out everything you can about this issue, because this issue is manipulated to harm your health. It's up to the people. it is up to the people to stand up to the corruption, to stand up to the bullying, and to stand up to, you know, the racketeering, if you will. It's up to the people to say, okay, enough, no more. I'm not going to buy this product anymore. You know, we as consumers are the only ones that are going to stop this, because I do not believe politically it's going to get stopped. It's gone way too far. It's gone on for too long, and their roots are too deep. And I think as consumers, we actually have to be the ones that fix this. Nobody else is going to fix this but us. How do we do it? We do it by standing up to these bullies and say, no more. I'm not going to buy your product. And money is the only thing they listen to. So if you stop buying their product, it's like stevia. A friend of mine in the 1980s was the stevia importer into Texas, where I live. He was the exclusive stevia importer of bringing it in from South America. He had a cookbook for stevia. It wasn't approved by the FDA. He was trying to get this on the market as an alternative to be sold in health food stores, et cetera, in its natural form, just to put in coffees and teas and to bake with. The FDA in Dallas, or in Arlington, went into his business, and they confiscated all of his stevia and all of his cookbooks and threatened to arrest him, which, of course, he got an attorney, and he wasn't arrested. But this took place in the 1980s. Now look at stevia. It's now on the market, and it's only because of money, not because it wasn't safe at all. Huh?
Now, do you believe that these people have kind of a direct influence on the authorities as well? Like if Monsanto says, hey, this guy's going to threaten our business with his aspartame importing business and stuff like that. So can you please just shut him down ruthlessly?
Exactly. Yes, I do. I believe that wholeheartedly. Because for those of us that speak out publicly against this, they monitor it. They monitor it. I have been interviewed by 60 Minutes and 2020, and those interviews never aired. Now, you tell me when you have a really hot story with proof behind it that could literally change our society and the entire diet industry, that's not going to make front page news? And we actually have a letter from a former talk show host at Good Morning America who sent us a letter and said, we would love to have you on Good Morning America, but unless another station does this at the same time, I cannot be exclusive with this because they will take me off the air. And we have that in a letter. So they've been manipulating this.
Mm-hmm. It's a real suppression syndrome. How deep mm-hmm. does it go? That's what
it goes probably to the point of no return. I would say people
In other words, it goes as deep as it possibly could.
Yes.
Wherever the bottom is, that's how deep it is.
Because if you stop and think, now, Vinny, aspartame has been on the market for over 30 years. Right? Or for 30 years. And if the truth about this were to go viral, which of course we all hope it does, let's say when the truth goes viral, can you imagine the lawsuits that are going to come out for women whose children were born with a lower IQ, which was proven in the lab, or with a deformed cleft palate, which has been proven in the lab, or with blindness and vision problems, which was proven in the lab.
We're coming off to break now, Janet. In fact, I'd like to have a big list of those. We'll be right back.
aspartame poisoning your liver. It breaks down like alcohol and you don't even get a buzz. Destroys your pineal gland and gets sold to people who work for Monsanto. And then you're gonna die because of the scumbaggery.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the most operatic 2 hours in talk radio on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest, the fabulous Dr. Janet Hull. Welcome back. You started off before we went to break on basically listing a whole bunch of these things that have been proven in a lab. I'd like you to actually kind of continue. I mean, we've only got an hour and a half left, so maybe we could... are there that many?
Yeah, we could. You know, it's funny because this is a 2 hour interview, and it's going to go so fast, Vinny. There is so much information to throw at everybody because nobody knows any of this stuff, and they're like, "Really, really, really?" It's just amazing what has been kept out of the public. I would say that the symptoms that we are seeing as chronic health issues worldwide are going to be the ones that are going to have aspartame at the root of them. Aspartame causes cancer. That has been proven. It causes brain tumors. That has been proven. And we're seeing more and more people, you know, having brain tumors. And they're blaming it on cell phones and stuff. Okay. But is the person drinking a Diet Cola while they're on the cell phone? I mean, which one is it, you know? Do they exacerbate one another? Does the aspartame weaken the body so the cell phone can get in? We've got so much coming at us with so little good information, we really don't have any good science anymore. And until you...
Are there any binary effects? Like, I don't know, like on the movie, what was it called? Die Hard with a Vengeance, they had this explosive, and either substance by itself, nothing, you know, you transport them easy, but you mix them, and it's a deadly explosive. Is there anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is going to blow your mind. Two things. One is when in the laboratory, Petri dish, when you mix saccharin with aspartame, both in the powdered form, okay, it will reach boiling point. So if you're consuming a product, which I call the sweetener blends, where everybody has pouted, so each of these companies has a little piece of the pie, so there's two or three or four of the different diet sweeteners all in one product, okay? Everybody's had a little piece. So when you have a product that contains both saccharin and aspartame, it will reach boiling point by the time it gets to your bladder and your kidneys. And so, golly gee, we're having all this kidney disease, and we're having all these bladder infections with people, and all of this incontinence. Now, see, it starts to all make sense. We have all this incontinence problems and all these drugs for incontinence. Well, if people are using both aspartame and saccharin in the same day, they're boiling their bladder. Okay, here's another one. The other one is, as I have talked with forensic anthropologists and I've talked with actually county coroners, when they have a body and they do an autopsy on that body, they can tell if that person was an alcoholic, right? Because their liver has very, very high formaldehyde levels and their liver is actually pickled or preserved, correct? From methanol.
Yeah.
When people have autopsies performed on them and they are not alcoholics, but they have been drinking diet products every day, all day for 20, 30 years, their liver looks exactly like an alcoholic's.
Hmm. So I watched a documentary called Sugar, the Bitter Truth, and the presenter actually did a very complicated scientific breakdown, but he shows these chemical compounds going into the liver And the liver reacts precisely the same way as it does when ethanol is put in there. So, yeah, what you're saying makes a lot of sense, you know. You basically, if you're drinking aspartame all the time, you'll be doing the same, if not more, damage than an alcoholic would.
Exactly, because you're really actually drinking it more. You know, people wake up first thing in the morning, or you're drinking it longer. How many people do you know that give it to their little two-year-old? Here, take a sip of mommy's Diet Cola. So
I know people that give them a. I know people that give them a 2.25 liter bottle of Coke Zero.
And how many pregnant women are drinking it during pregnancy? So that baby's life begins with a very toxic, dangerous, carcinogenic element that puts a hole in their brain. And then we wonder, we've got this rise in autism, we have this rise in bipolar, we have this rise in phobias, we have a rise in depression and suicides. I mean, I could go on with it and get depressed. You know, and so many children with ADHD and ADD. But yet, Mayor Bloomberg wants to take the regular colas out of the school and leave the diet colas in the school. Vinny, this has gone on far, far too long, and the damage that it has done is almost irreversible. And if we do not get the public, the global public, aware of the dangers of aspartame, people are going to be dying and living their lives in misery, and they're never, ever going to know why. And to me, that's a disservice. If you're sick, you need to know why.
Is it possible to have some kind of a supplement or counteracting agent that would clear up aspartame in your body?
Yes. Yes, there's a detox. I have a detox program that I invented actually to help people detox from aspartame, and this comes from my environmental engineering spin. I was lucky to be one of the first five Americans that did remediation after Glasnost in Eastern Europe in the late 1980s. After the Berlin Wall came down, and I went over there with an environmental company, and we did work in Poland and Czechoslovakia. And when I was over there, I was very, very fortunate to talk to some awesome, awesome East Europeans, and I learned about the healing benefits of French green clay. And French green clay comes from the dried European seabeds around the Mediterranean, obviously in France. And they're very, very pure, and they're deep. And Europeans have been ingesting clay for centuries, not just putting it on their skin as mud packs or to remove, you know, alopecia or you know, skin diseases, probably used it for leprosy back in biblical times. But French green clay has been ingested for centuries in Europe. And when Chernobyl melted down, the Russians knew, the Soviets at the time, they knew the healing benefits of French green clay. So I found out firsthand from the Eastern Europeans that when Chernobyl melted down, the Soviets put French green clay in chocolate, and they dispensed chocolate free to the public so that they didn't want to let them know of the dangers they'd just been exposed to with Chernobyl. But what they were doing is they were trying to detox them immediately with the clay. Then the Soviet government has covered, they raised and buried Chernobyl under a landfill of French green clay because it absorbed the radiation and held it. So I thought to myself, if the French green clay can encapsulate and entrap radiation this well, when you ingest the French green clay, it should capture and trap all toxins in the body. So I brought the French green clay back to the United States, and I put together a detox program for aspartame toxicity. And Vinny, it will take out mercury, lead, aluminum, it takes out any toxin in the body without any side effects. And so I work with people that have aspartame toxicity. And when they detox, they do get better. Now, it depends upon the permanent damage. Some people have gone blind from the methanol and aspartame. Some people have gotten onto insulin and become diabetics because it does make diabetes worse. And some people have been diagnosed with MS and they don't have MS. So sometimes the damage has gone on too long and they can't restore 100% health. But I have hundreds upon hundreds of people I have worked with that have restored 100% of their health.
So basically, the body is an amazing thing and it can heal itself, so, provided you stop poisoning it and start
exactly.
getting some nice thing in there.
The neat thing about nature and being an environmental scientist is we see it all the time in nature and we don't question it. For some reason, we question it when we do the same thing to our human body. But in nature, there can be an oil spill, radiation, whatever. You can go back in and clean that up. You can find microorganisms that will eat it. The clays will absorb it. Alkalinity will disengage it. And then nature will restore itself. Well, the human body can do the same darn thing. Remove the toxin, replace the nutrients it's stripped from your body, and your body will heal.
All right. Well, that's a good first hour for us, and we have one more with the fabulous Dr. Janet Hull, expert on aspartame, and we will be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Don't you go changing, ladies and gentlemen.
So please hear my plea. Unity.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. All the shows are archived, so you can check them out at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and it says all shows are archived. Click here, and you'll get there, as well as special interviews, and I go on other shows as well. So if you want to see what I'm like with other people and stuff like that, go for your life. It's all free, all available there. The information is compelling, always. Just like my very special guest, Janet Hull, Dr. Janet Hull, should I say. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, getting into the whole aspartame issue, you it's like there's inputs, throughputs, and outputs. And if I were to be, I don't know, conspiratorially minded, you'd mm-hmm. have a look at the definition of conspiracy. It's two or more people coming together to cause harm on another group of people without that group of people knowing about it. So aspartame definitely fits in there. And my definition of conspiracy theorist is somebody who believes that there are powerful people in this world who have a lot of influence, who use their power to maintain their influence. And in my opinion, whenever you're dealing with anything that's not public knowledge or a conspiratorial or things like that, people will often have reservations about whether or not they listen to it or choose to comprehend it. So as soon as somebody says the word conspiracy, it doesn't exist. There's no such thing. But it's simply not the case. And it's the wording and terminology that we use that sometimes people get hung up on. And the fact of the matter is, aspartame's poison and it's dangerous, and they're keeping on putting it through. So they can't have any positive intentions.
And I believe that this has run its course. I really do think there is going to be an end to this, Vinnie. I'm going to say within the next few years. I am surprised, as I had mentioned before, that this has had the tenure that it has. And from the documents that I have read in the early days of NutraSweet, when it had the exclusive patent, so we could say the word NutraSweet here because they were the only supplier of the diet colas and all of the diet gums and the diet products. And at that time, Ajinomoto Corporation in Japan was the exclusive supplier of aspartame. Now Ajinomoto has 40% of the world market because when Monsanto lost its patent in the early 90s, aspartame then could be manufactured by any company. The patent was public then. But when it was exclusive and they had the monopoly on the world market with these diet products, definitely they realized that they thought they were going to get busted, which is why they kept saccharin in their back pocket. They were ready to put the cancer warning on saccharin, but they never did until aspartame came on the market. And then when aspartame came on the market in the early 80s, with G.D. Searle, when they came on the market at that time and they realized it was going to go, then they backed off saccharin so that NutraSweet was the one greatest thing in the whole wide world. They didn't think it was going to go, and so they had a backup plan in case they were found out. Well, all of these researchers that had the proof that aspartame was dangerous to a fetus, dangerous to human health, they got shut down. They got quieted. Several were in auto accidents that were mysterious. Several of the other researchers were, their research institutions all of a sudden had these large research facilities that were being built by G.D. Searle or Monsanto. So once they realized, again, like I said, when the transition took the leap to go political on this, the whole game changed. And once that game changed, yes, they realized what they had. They realized the monopoly. They realized the money. They realized the control. And it just kept spiraling from there. All the drugs that they then created to counter all of the side effects from these diet sweeteners. People, consumers were coming to them like sheep to the slaughter. Once that scenario took hold, yeah, the aspartame issue became an entirely different entity. It did become a very manipulated, very corrupt food additive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, I'm wondering that, though, how exactly can this happen without sort of extreme backing? You know what I'm saying? Like, there has to be shareholders that have shares in, let's say, Monsanto and Mayer Pharmaceuticals and lobbyists in government and so on and so forth and what have you, because I see it kind of like a nexus. And when you look into aspartame, or you look into or virtually anything that the government or corporations are doing that's real nasty to people, you find out invariably that there's so many other connections, and particularly very similar names pop up.
They do. And again, I think you'll see the patterns too when you go back and look at the history of all various controversial pharmaceuticals or food additives. You can look at the pattern, and I would say that before the 50s, we were looking at technology that was used to help in the wars. You know, we were looking at technologies that preserved food longer, you know, that could stay on the shelf a lot longer for medications and that kind of thing. Once we got into the 60s and the 70s, back in those days, the FDA was really trying to do the best job they could do. They were a group of human beings that were trying to make the best decisions. As time went on and the politics of, you know, manufacturing and pharmaceuticals began to infiltrate political control, then we started seeing changes in the FDA. When aspartame was first approved in the 1970s, the FDA stepped up to the plate. They really did. They stepped up to the plate and they said, no, this isn't safe. And this is something a lot of people don't know about the FDA and the government. The FDA cannot do any research on its own. There's too many products coming in for approval. It's a government agency, so there's not enough money to employ the researchers needed. So the FDA relies on the corporations and the companies applying for FDA approval to do their own research. And they're back in the olden days, it was the honor system. Well, in this day and time, there's no honor system. You know, these corporations are submitting their own research for a product that they see could make them billions of dollars. But in the 60s and 70s, the FDA said, no, we're going to look at independent research, and they did hire researchers for a panel to research the safety of aspartame. And believe it or not, this panel said, no, aspartame is not safe for the public. So you see, we have this cutoff in the early 1970s, 1972 to 1974. And between 74 and 81, we see the corruption. That's the dark, deep well of corruption that began to take place. That's where we saw the pharmaceuticals, G.D. Searle and Monsanto, infiltrate into the government through Robert Shapiro and Donald Rumsfeld. That's where it took place, right there. And then from that point, the FDA then was being paid off. Yep.
So, you said in 1984, right?
It came out, it came back on the market in 81, 82, right when Reagan was taking office. When Reagan was elected and Reagan took office, he put in place a new FDA director, and his name was Hull Hayes, and no relation to me. When Hayes took office, when Reagan came into office, Hayes, Reagan said to Hayes, look, we want to speed up the government process here. We want to get products sped through faster. We want to get approvals faster. We just want to speed this system up. So Hayes pushed NutraSweet through, pushed aspartame through. The FDA directors prior to Hayes had rejected the aspartame. When Hayes and Reagan came into office, people woke up one morning, aspartame had been approved. 6 months later, Paul Hayes goes to work for one of the Monsanto companies. So well, that's
sounds like
when
he's been he's been promoted, and I see the similar methodology happening with, say, corrupt cops or corrupt government officials and things like that. You would think that they'd look at this person and go, oh my God, this person's dangerous, they're a criminal, and they lie all the time and stuff like that. So naturally, they're perfect people to put in the heads of companies, the perfect people mm-hmm. to put in the heads of countries, because, mm-hmm. well, basically, if you have a look at most major corporations, like multinationals and things of that nature, and indeed the major governments of the world, corruption's part of the game. They mm-hmm. simply wouldn't be able to survive without it.
I would say on the path of the consumer and what we're looking at now, as you said, with conspiracy theories, okay, when you look at a very well-organized machine, which we are now looking at a very well-organized machine with the aspartame issue, because it is litigious, and at some point in time, this is probably going to be what we would call a sweetener gate. It is going to be a massive litigious issue because of all of the damage this has done to fetuses, to children, to people. And they were aware of this, okay? There's your key, is they knew about it. And so they know that it is litigious like this. And so now part of this conspiracy would be, how do we do chaos control? How do we do crowd control? How are we going to back out of aspartame and avoid the lawsuits? That's what we're looking at now, actually. PepsiCo just came out with a recent news, news clip that they say that they're going to start backing off of aspartame, and they're going to put A-sulfame K in their Pepsi formula, because they're claiming that their Pepsi formula just doesn't seem to taste as good as it used to, because when the aspartame is in the heat, it breaks down and it causes the product not to have its really great taste. In my opinion, they're backing out of the liability, and they're trying to back their way out of future litigation, because when aspartame is in an environment that is over 86 degrees Fahrenheit. That's it, just 86 degrees, and your body is 98 degrees Fahrenheit. So when aspartame is in the Coke truck in Texas, I don't know about in Auckland, but in Texas, when it's just sitting in the Coke truck, it's going to break down because we've got 102 degrees outside, you know? And so by the time it gets on the grocery shelf, that aspartame has already broken down. And so when it breaks down at 86 degrees, that methanol just goes free. So you have free methanol, and it may only be 10% of the aspartame, but you've got free methanol floating through your body. You drink 12 of those a day, like many people do, plus you chew your gums, plus you take your diet yogurts, plus you eat your diet ice cream at night. People are getting so much of this that they've got that methanol in their system. I believe, and the manufacturing companies know this. So what I think we're going to start seeing, Vinny, is they're going to start backing out of aspartame very, very slowly, thinking that it's going to be a covert move. Okay, we'll drop this stuff, but we'll do it very secretively. Maybe nobody will notice. And then, of course, if anybody gets sick from our diet Pepsi now, we've got A-sulfame K in it. So we can also blame the A-sulfame K. To me, that was a move, a major step by a major corporation to try to get themselves out of future trouble.
Indeed. Well, basically, it looks like this. If you've got a whole bunch of people that are suspecting what you're up to, if you're a criminal or stuff like that, you either take out those people so that they can't say nothing no more, or you try and cover it up and dispose of the evidence. It's an interesting concept. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations. You made it. Welcome to the Crusader.
Welcome back.
It's been a long time coming, yo.
It's been a long time coming. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Please visit the website and check out the archives at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com if you can. There's basically unlimited amount of stuff that you can use there to inform yourself about virtually any topic you could ever conceive of. It's probably in there, all right? And I'm not being arrogant. I ain't joking. It's simply the case because we let virtually anybody, not everybody, but anybody, come on the show to talk about whatever it is that motivates them, whatever it is that they are passionate about. Today, my very special guest, Dr. Janet Hull, passionate about aspartame and artificial sweeteners and the scumbaggery therein. And Janet, I'd like to ask you a question. It's about kind of, are there any elements about this subject that you broach quite regularly as you know, part of your gig, your game, whatever? Are there any elements of it that you kind of refuse to speak about or try to avoid because it's a little bit, you don't know whether it's 100% true or something and it's an opinion, not a fact?
That is correct. What I try to do, because I am a research scientist, what I try to do is promote the data that is 100% supported by documents and evidence, because I feel, because this is a debate, and we are debating against some very, very powerful people. If you continue to stay focused on what you know is true and cannot be covered up or debated, then you're going to keep the debate on a real good, positive move forward. What happens with this group of people that are trying to silence this information is that they play dirty. Obviously, they play dirty. And in order to stay and survive and to stay on top of this issue, we have to stay focused on what we know is true. So I pretty much focus on, I've got my opinions on everything, but when I do a public presentation and I'm wanting to educate people, I want to educate them like a professor would. I'm going to educate them on what I know is solid. And then from there, they can go on their own journey and investigate in their own ways. But it forms a good base, a good solid base. And Vinny, gosh, I got sick in 1991. I wrote my book Sweet Poison in 1997, and here we are in 2013, and we're still talking about it. You know, the book is still selling. It's taken this many years, and I've continuously kept this going and kept this going. But I think it's because anything I put out there, anything I say, anything I write, anything I do, they can't dispute it because it's backed. And so that's what's kept me going. And I think that's how we have to approach this particular topic. It's easily proven. Easily proven. We just have to get the information public. Once it's public, it ought to come down like a house of cards.
Well, that's true, and it's kind of held together kind of like by duct tape to a certain degree. That's how liars are, you know. And on this show, I like to encourage people, particularly credible researchers by yourself, to actually go into those topics that are your opinion, that you're not 100% sure about. Because usually you don't mention them because, you know, the host might judge you or the audience might not comprehend, think you're a little bit nuts or anything like that. But what I try to do is just give people the platform to just say what they think and say what they feel, just because here's a place where you won't be judged, and with an intelligent audience that I have, you will be comprehended regardless.
Yeah. Well, I believe I could even have documents to back this up. But the history of this particular topic sources to a handful of very arrogant individuals, mostly male, who I don't think have respect for people. I think they think they're better than others, and they have no regard for human life. And they look at everyone with a dollar tag on their forehead. And I think that they looked at something that they could make a lot of money on off of people. I think that it stroked their arrogance and their ego. And when they realized how easy this was, that it was like sheep coming to the slaughter, I think that their arrogance grew, and I think their greed grew. And I think it's to the point now to where these key players, Robert Shapiro, Donald Rumsfeld, they have taken their money and they've scrammed, because I think that they're wusses, and I think that they know that this is going to come down, and when it comes down, they're going to run and hide. And I think that's where we are right now. I think Shapiro and Rumsfeld are going to hide from this, and I think when this particular aspartame issue does become public and it comes down, I think you're going to see the rats jumping off the ship. And I think that's where we are at this point. Your advertisement, right, you know, at this break, was that we are at a crossroads, be it an earth change, be it a social change or a human change. I do believe we are at a crossroads. And I think that our culture is in for a lot of changes, and I have to hope that they're for the better. But the sad thing is that if we have a devastation on this planet, if people do not understand the truth about what's been going on all around them for over the last 30 to 40 years, to me, that's what makes it so sad. I think people need awareness. And it might be a bitter pill to take, but I think people need to wake up and shake up and recognize the fact that they have been controlled and disrespected by a bunch of arrogant rulers and leaders in this country and in our world. So that's my opinion.
My opinion is similar lines to that, and a slightly more clinical. Basically, if you ever look at the American Medical Journal, I think it was maybe four or five years ago, they published an article studying psychopathy, and the description of a psychopath was very interesting. A very nice, rather well-polished, intoxicating individual who brings you in, and you kind of admire them, but they don't have terribly large amounts of relationships outside of business, no long-lasting ones anyway, and they have no concern for anybody other than themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the three likely industries that the journal said that you are to find these people is business, media, and politics. And just recently, there's a great documentary that's come out called I Am Fishhead, where they had a look at the people who were responsible in no small part for the financial crisis, for instance. And what they've determined is that being a psychopath and having that kind of what we would call an emotional handicap in the industries, on the other hand, are actually a leg up, as it were, because they sabotage people that are above them in order to get their job. They lie and manipulate in order to get them way up there. Because if you want to do something honestly, with integrity, it'll often takes time. If you want to do something dishonestly and psychopathically, you don't have to wait around for achievements or any kind of moral ethic to give you your input before you act. And if you understand that mentality, suddenly a lot more of government and businesses and media makes more sense, or at least to me it does anyway, because you see the symptomology and you see the effect of it in our financial industry and in our politics. You know, these people who lie endlessly and yet continue to benefit from lies and manipulation endlessly as well. And they're not called up on it. And it's true what you say. We are coming to that point where these lies will be revealed en masse. And there are so many, not just aspartame, that are kind of like coursing its way all through our society, our entire medical industry, the media, blah, 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 blah. It's a big, big can of worms. And I think now it's about time to feed that can of worms to the fishes.
You know, I think we're at the point. And I didn't mean to cut you off, because I enjoyed listening to the way you put that. That was very, very clear. And I think prior, something mysterious about this point in time in human history, we really are at a turning point. Because prior to this moment, let's say in the 1960s, and maybe it's technology that has moved that has made the veil come down, you know. But it seems that prior to this point in our cultural history around the world, human beings didn't have the influence to stand up to the aspartame, to the NutraSweet company, or to Monsanto chemical company, or even to politicians. But look at what going on in Greece and Italy and Spain. The people are finally standing up, and I think, you know, we've had a history of who could stand up to rulers and kings, etc. For some reason, the NutraSweet company and Monsanto chemical company were able to pull this off successfully and put a toxic chemical out there that they could make billions off of. But for some reason, this point in our human history seems to be the time to where what we say and what we know is being heard. I've been saying the same thing for almost 20 years, but it seems right now those words seem to be heard differently. People are understanding them more. I think our society has a part of this role, though, to make the changes, because we're accepting what is being handed to us and given to us, and accepting that, well, we can't change it. No, we can change it. And I think it's up to us now, because the ruling powers are going to continue to do what they do forever. They're not going to change it because it's been working for them. Now I think it's up to the masses to say no more. We're going to make changes. And it's like your girlfriend's mate who is drinking these Coke Zeros like they were bottles of water. My question to her now would be, I would ask her this, Benny, why? Why are you drinking this crap? Is it a psychological thing? Do you have a weight issue? Do you have an eating disorder? Do you have an issue with your self-esteem? Why are you drinking this stuff? Here is the data to say that it's bad. Why do you continue to do it? And until that friend of your girlfriend stops drinking the Diet Cola, the manufacturers of the Diet Cola are going to keep making it and selling it. So my point is this. I think we have reached a point in human evolution and in human history to where the masses are going to have to stand up and go, why am I continuing to take this? Why am I doing this? Repetitively, day after day, just being a trained monkey and a sheep. And so for your girlfriend's friend, that would be my question. You're an intelligent lawyer. Why do you continue to drink this stuff? Come on, you know it's bad for you. And I would throw the accountability back on her. And once she comes to terms with that accountability, then that's when she'll stop using it. And then that's when these corporations are going to start breaking down. When each of us as individuals change and then culturally we change, and as the masses we change. I think all we have to do is stand up to this corruption and just say, no more. And I think, again, it'll fall down like a house of cards.
And the analogy that we use plenty of time, like a sheep to the slaughter, it occurs to me that sheep will always follow their shepherd, whomever the shepherd may be. In essence and in earnest, I believe that we simply need to replace the current shepherds with us and lead them to greener pastures and away from the slaughterhouse.
Well, I think that's what we've been counting on. I think we've been counting on a new shepherd, but I think all the shepherds are corrupt. I mean, I think it's if you have a decent shepherd, like let's say you have a decent presidential candidate, and he gets in office. Well, there's too much corruption to where he's just not going to be able to change it. You know what I think has to happen, Vinny, and what I think might be happening in this 2012 transitional thing? I think the sheep are finally going to say, why have we been following the shepherd since millennia? It's time for us to say, nope, I don't want to go with the shepherd. I'm going this way. I think the sheep have to change.
You know, that's an interesting point there, and that would actually be a game changer in all of human history, because traditionally speaking, it's usually been one individual who pops up out of the woodwork, whether that be Alexander the Great or Gandhi or Dr. Martin Luther King. These great people, and there's, of course, plenty of women that you could throw out there as well. These great people find it in themselves to go and do benefits for everybody else, but they wind up getting killed and assassinated, and then everybody slides back down the hill again. The idea is, for the first time in human history, don't make the shepherd wake everybody up. Make the sheep wake themselves up. We'll be right back after that. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment here. And when I get guests like Dr. Janet Hull, people have got a lot of credibility, a lot of experience, a lot of insight. I always regret that the show's only 2 hours long. So that movie 2012, as I say many often, I just wish we had more time. But we don't. So we'll have to make do with what we can. I'd like to throw a question at you, and it's an intense question. It's an intense question. It's a fishing question. Okay, so take from it what you will. If you were to look back on your life, and have a look at your achievements, your accomplishments, your experiences, and then you were to look forward to, say, the day that you die on your deathbed, what would you say to the people who are with you on the day you die? What would you want them to remember about you, and what would your message to them for the future be?
I really hope that I made a difference in this world. I could see things, I can feel things that others can't, and I feel like my purpose is just to turn the light on for people, just so that they can start their journey on their own. I guess I'm a bell ringer in a way, and I would have to hope that my book, Sweet Poison, and I've got another book out that I'm trying to get published at the moment on Earth Changes, I would have to hope that what I know to be true, which will help the evolution of our souls and our spirits, I would have to hope that my work succeeded in enlightening other people and opening the doors to set them free so that they could just keep moving forward on their own journey. I would have to hope I succeeded.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's like when you devote your life to others, and I've said this many times on the show before, the reason why we're doing this is the protection of human life. That's right. That's basically what it comes down to, protect human life at all costs, even to the point of sacrificing what our lives might have been or could be or that kind of thing. You know, I always wanted to just make Hollywood movies and stuff like that and get into the film industry, but once you see what's going on, your life changes. Those goals you once had simply no longer exist because the reality that they were once based on also no longer exists. And you have to start from scratch again.
We do. We live in a hologram. This planet is such an... Are you still there, Vinny?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I thought I lost you there for a second. It got real quiet. This planet is such a beautiful, special place. And every blade of grass on this planet is just amazing. Every animal, everything is so wonderful here. We have been given a plethora of such fantastic, positive stuff. And we have literally destroyed it. We have taken advantage of it. We put a price tag on this entire planet. And we have allowed the greedy, arrogant, mostly men, sorry, to take advantage of this entire globe for personal gain and ego. And to me, that is the saddest thing, because we had been given the opportunity to be the best we could be, and we would be so much further down the line of evolution if we had spent the last 2,000 years playing on this grand planet instead of trying to manipulate it and label it and price it. It's almost as if we have wasted the last 2,000 years. And to me, the shame of it is that one day, someday, this planet's going to keep going, but mankind isn't. Because if we don't destroy ourselves, you know, the planet is going to have enough climate changes to where we're going to change in such ways that everything that we know today is going to be very, very different. So what we have for today is all we've really got, because tomorrow it could all be gone or it could all just be different. And not enough people have savored what's in front of them at this very moment and really paid homage to it. It's all nature. It's all wonderful, wonderful nature. Instead, we're focused on how do we look, or what car do we drive, or how much money can we make off this, or do I really have to do this? I don't feel like it. I'm lazy. I'd rather watch TV or get on my iPad. We're really off track, Vinny. Humanity is very, very off track. And I really think we've gone so far down the wrong road. I don't know if we're going to be able to find our way back. Not the way things used to be. I don't think anything on this planet is going to be the way it used to be. It's all going to be very, very different in the future because we've burned our bridges. I would say we've burned our bridges.
Like,
now, not to sound
passed,
negative.
As if we're past the point of no return. No, it's not negative. I mean, look, Chernobyl, for instance. Do you think we can go back to a cancer rate we had pre-Chernobyl?
No. Right.
There ain't nothing we can go back to. You can't go back. And that's what I found. A friend of mine asked me once, if you had the option, Vinny, to live today or live 1,000 years ago in some Native American Indian village with a teepee and a beautiful family, go fishing all day and never have to worry about any of the crap that we're poisoned with or any stuff like that, you know, just live in a nice communal village and everything like that. I said, maybe I would. But point is, I can't, right? You can't go back. You can only go forward. And I wouldn't trade who I am now for who I could be at any other time through history. This is the most important time. Trials and tribulations are often overcome by people, because people, despite what many people would think, are incredibly talented, capable, and creative. And it seems when we work together, when we try to do things for others, specifically when you're in service to humanity, you accomplish the greatest and most powerful things that, well, basically, the things that it's capable of overcoming, the things that we're capable of overcoming and have done all the way through history, are unfathomable. And
right.
The problems then were just as unfathomable as the problems we see today. So, on the one hand, yes, we're in great risk, grave danger, and I am of strong belief that many, many people will die soon enough because of this this system and the things. In fact, people are already dying all over the place from these various toxins and chemicals that are contaminating our lives. But I do believe in the capacity of the human spirit because it's the lesson of history.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have all of the conveniences that we have now with no strings attached to wherever, you know, it was all equally proportioned to where there was geothermal energy that was powering the planet and Tesla's resonance technology to where we could communicate with each other with with no strings attached? Wouldn't it be great if some people had petroleum? It's like, well, okay, dude, that's too messy and much too complicated for me. You can do your thing, but I'm going to come over here and get this free energy source here. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we took all of our technology, all of the brilliance that we have gained as a human being, and we turned it towards the good and a universal planet? And again, that's where your Gandhis and your Martin Luther Kings and your John F. Kennedys were all coming into play. They were saying that. And, you know, Abraham Lincoln wanted to say, come on, well, let's just create our own money. We don't need to get involved with any of the other money in Europe and all this and that. And it's like we can't quite get there. We can't figure out how to let the good stay good. There's always some sort of parasite and some sort of pillager to take it
over.
It's
something that's holding us back. It's holding us back, right? Like a leech that just simply needs to be burned off so that his teeth will retract and he'll drop on the floor and go, ah!
Exactly. And I think it's that easy. It's just like one of those sheep has got to say, no, I don't like that shepherd, so I'm not going. And then the rest of the sheep go, well, I don't like him either, but I was just following everybody else. As sheep, we've got to be able to stand up and say, nope, this is the wrong shepherd.
He's the bad shepherd.
Yeah.
It brings to mind two photos that I saw on Facebook just quickly. One is a group of sheep being herded by a sheepdog, and there's one sheep outside of it, and he's saying to the other sheep, hey, guys, I think the farmer and the dog are working together. And one of the other sheep says, oh, Trevor, you're just a conspiracy theorist. And then the next one is a lot more gruesome. It's actually in a meatworks, and there's one sheep there still in his wool, and he's looking around at all these other dead sheep that are hanging up and all their meat and blood dropping off him. And he says, I warned you.
Right. And that is so true. I think what we're looking at now is the world that I would like to have, Vinny, would be as I'd like to be able to shake your girlfriend's mate's hand and say, hi, I'm Dr. Janet Hall, and how are you? And, you know, by the way, I've got something, you know, that I just want to share with you and just give so that I can make your life better. And I would love for her to be able to turn around and go, thank you so much. What a kind soul you are to share with me some information that you think will make me better. Let me take your information and go research it, and then I'll decide whether it's right for me or not. But thank you.
It sounds like a nice world, and I say we should work every day to head towards it, even if it's an impossible dream, doesn't mean we can't achieve it. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Janet, thank you very much for your time.